Is there such a thing as a Hungarian photographer's eye? Is there a kind of universal Hungarian vision that characterizes the world-famous photographers who have come from Hungary? What do Robert Capa, Brassai and Andrei Kertész have in common? Is it really just that they were all Hungarian?
It is often asked, in relation to the world-famous Hungarian-born photographer Andrei Kertész, that whether his work has any particularly Hungarian characteristics. Can his unique talent be explained by his Hungarian roots and heritage that he cherished until his death, even though he spent most of his life away from his native country, and indeed from Europe? Eva Fischli, photo historian and curator of the Kertész collection of the Hungarian National Museum, and Endre Cserna, photo historian at the Mai Manóház, talk about the interesting and adventurous life of Andrei Kertész.
He did not become an American. He did not deny his homeland.
Andrei Kertész, or Kertész Andor, maintained and valued his Hungarian identity throughout his life, speaking English with a strong Hungarian accent, a kind of English-French-Hungarian hybrid, even though he lived in the United States from 1936 until his death for almost 50 years.
But I think it would be an exaggeration to say that his entire oeuvre had a specifically Hungarian touch.
It would be difficult to identify a common characteristic among the artists of Hungarian origin who have become world famous, since it is precisely their exceptionality and uniqueness that have brought them recognition. Andrei Kertész's career is another example of that. Although he did not start out with any artistic concept in photography, there was something in his vision that made him more than most documentary photographers of his time.
Speaking of Kertész, one can see that in his interviews and in his biographies, his story was usually told as a direct road to be an artist, and that he even took photos as a child without camera in his mind. Actually, looking at his diaries, one can see also that the first camera was a kind of gift bought by his mother in June 1912, in the year of his graduation.
Receiving a camera at the age of 18 was a usual gift for a middle-class boy at that time. Born in 1894, Kertész came from a middle-class Jewish family. His father was a bookseller. Andor was middle child of three sons. Despite he was growing up in Budapest, the family spent a lot of time in Szigetbecse, a small village next to River Danube, where his uncle owned the property. This peaceful and rural atmosphere of the country shaped Kertész's later career path, although he had a camera.
And actually, it was his younger brother, Jenő, who was very enthusiastic about this camera. He was very playful, interested in technical things, and later became an engineer. So at the beginning, it was him who took more photos and experimented with photography.
Andor and Jenő collaborated actually at the beginning. They took photos together in the 1910s. In many of these early works, one can see Jenő as a model who also helped Andor to take the photos with a long exposure. So, photography first was a hobby for Kertész, who could not really find his own place in the world. He worked in the business world at the stock exchange, but it was really not for him. He also tried beekeeping at that time, but even if he liked nature, he wanted something more. He was a sensitive young man who could find a way of expression in photography.
These are the years when photography starts to democratize at a rapid pace, so to speak.
Cameras and raw materials were becoming simpler and more affordable, and the background industry began to be developed, where films could be produced, even blow-ups could be made. It was also during these years that printing technology exploded, allowing photographs to be published in magazines and the genre of the illustrated magazines to emerge. We can say that photography became a middle-class bourgeois hobby, a pastime activity.
Well, maybe it's something like now when people buy drones and play with them. They take pictures with them. This hobby deepens their approach to cinema and photography or video.
The beginner photographer is interested in how the medium itself works, how the image is created, what are the physical, optical, chemical backgrounds, how they work, and only then does he start to try out subjects, approaches, and different attitudes. This was the case with Curtis, and even the outbreak of the First World War could not prevent this. He joined the Austro-Hungarian army and took his camera with him and used it as a tool of communication. He used his camera as a tool for recording the very trivial moments of events of the life of soldiers. He took several photos that he sent home to his family and took photos of his fellow soldiers who could send them their relatives. He also sent pictures from the battlefield to a popular Hungarian journal, Érdekes Újság, which announced a photography contest for soldiers to send photos from the front lines. These were not the photos from photojournalists who wanted to show a special event, a person, a conflict, or something dramatic. These were photos from the everyday life of the battlefields. And Curtis was one of these photographers. He took photos by the soldiers cleaning themselves, by they were eating, resting. These were the first early forerunners of the photographic genre that Curtis is associated with, the photo essay. After the war, he started to use photography as a way of expression, really. He also had some artist friends, Hungarian painters, still in Budapest and near Budapest. They went to the villages and to the forest near the Danube and spent a lot of time together talking about art, etc. Then he immigrated to Paris in September in 1925. Soon after arriving in Paris, he changed his first name to André, which he kept for the rest of his life. In Paris, he found critical and commercial success. In 1927, he was the fourth photographer to have a one-man exhibition at the Sacré de Printemps Gallery. This was the golden age of picture magazines in Europe. Incredible numbers of copies were sold from these magazines. There were at least three or four different magazines in almost every major European city across Europe, and they sold hundreds of thousands of copies from them. People were hungry for images, and this provoked a competition in the market. There was a need for photographers and creators, for innovation, to even more professional solutions, to even more interesting approaches. In this era, Curtis created the genre of the photo essay. A photo essay presents a public situation or an interesting event with a certain number of photos, either without text or with very little text. In these magazines, the ratio of the text to image is reversed and the images take over.
And the intellectual circle of the Vue magazine, for instance, this journal, which was absolutely for the middle-brow audience of France at that time, helped him to work with excellent photographers, fellow photographers as well, but also with editors and graphic designers of that time. So he was absolutely related to them and worked with them. And by this kind of work, he learned a lot.
France and Paris, in particular, became a melting pot for artists, poets and actors from all over the world. We are at the birth of the avant-garde. We are at the time of the emergence of Dadaism and Surrealism, movements which all had a great influence on Curtis, and he became friends with several artists. These art movements moved away from the conservative bourgeois approach that had previously defined the visual arts, and they believed in a media revolution, Just think of the great changes in the cinema and the performing arts alongside photography.
So, Curtis arrives and starts working in such a very lively, very progressive, very forward-looking and very colorful, very multicultural environment.
In Paris, under the influence of the avant-garde, surrealism and dadaism, he gradually moved away from a reporter's approach and began to wonder what photography as a medium could do. In the past, due to the influence of Art Nouveau, photography genre mission was to be as similar as possible to painting. And then photographers, coming from a mainly journalistic or documentary background, started to look at how to develop photography into an autonomous art form. Curtis, along with many of his fellow photographers, starts to look at what photography can do. What can photography show that is different from, say, painting or graphic art? He is interested in structures, compositions, the materiality of different surfaces, and his photographic approach underwent a significant development, which he continued to develop until his death. In 1933, Curtis published his first personal book of photographs, Enfance, decided to his fiancée Elizabeth and his mother, who had died that year. He published regularly during the succeeding years. Paris, published in 1934, was dedicated to his brothers Imre and Yenu. Nos Amis le Bête, Our Friends the Animals, was released in 1936, and Les Cathédrales du Vin, The Cathedrals of Wine, in 1937. Social and political tensions were rising in Europe with the growing strength in Germany of the Nazi Party. Many magazines emphasized stories about political topics and stopped publishing Curtis because of his apolitical subject. With his commissioned work dropping and persecution of Jews increasing, Curtis and his wife Elizabeth decided to move to New York. The couple arrived in New York on the 15th of October in 1936, and the American way of life was quite strange to him from the very beginning.
However, it was the right time and the right place, because Europe became soon a battlefield after his arrival to the US, and in the post-war period, soon the Iron Curtain was lowered too. So since he was born from a Jewish family in Europe, he might have been in danger. Or in Hungary, maybe, he might have died. In New York, actually, he not only survived war, but even renewed himself in the 1960s.
He first started shooting for Harper's Bazaar, and then works for Life magazine and Vogue, and has various volumes published. In the 1940s, László Mohai Nagy invites him to teach at the new Bauhaus School in Chicago, but he declines the invitation. But he was very active and successful at that time too, even if later in his life he described in interviews these years as a failure. It was more because of his old age and bitterness.
So even if he always mentioned that he was much happier in Europe, and especially at the end of his life, he really felt that the time spent in the US was not perfect at all. But in terms of the profession or in terms of the status of an artist as a photographer, he was really there in the right moment.
Curtis returned to Hungary shortly before his death, when he met a number of artists who asked him why he was living in New York, if he did not like America. He also had an apartment in Paris and the same respect in Europe as in the United States. He then replied that while in New York, they would pay $10,000 for a vintage print. In Europe, the genre did not exist yet. Although towards the end of his life he had a much bitter view of himself and his achievements, André Curtis has largely shaped what we know and think about photography today. He is one of the world-famous artists whose fate began in Hungary and whose roots have certainly shaped everything they have created as artists. But he also shares the fate of many other famous Hungarians. those who have to leave their homeland and then become world-famous Hungarians abroad. And despite the fact that he himself was often said that his work is under-recognized in America, the facts show otherwise. He was a respected artist and acknowledged by Henri Cartier-Bresson and W. Eugen Smith and many others. Endre Cerna sums it up this way.
If you look at the fact that a boy from Teleki Square in Budapest goes around the world and exhibits in Budapest, New York, Paris, and the BBC makes a documentary about him in 1983, I think that's a picture of a successful man.